I am now reading to you chapter 8 of Ajahn Sujen's book on the perfections. Chapter 8, The Perfection of Truthfulness. The commentary to the Basket of Conduct defines the perfection of truthfulness as follows. Quote, truthfulness has the characteristic of non-deceptiveness in speech. Its function is to verify in accordance with fact. Its manifestation is excellent. Honesty is its proximate cause. Unquote. The perfection of truthfulness, Sakka Parami, is sincerity and truthfulness with regard to realities. It means truthfulness through body, speech, and mind. In order to realize the Four Noble Truths, one should be truthful, sincere, with regard to oneself. And this means truthful with regard to the realities which appear just as they are. Kusala is kusala, and akusala is akusala. There cannot be otherwise, no matter whether they arise in oneself or in someone else. If we see the disadvantage of untruth and falsity, we shall further develop the perfection of truthfulness. In the Tipitaka, deceitful speech is compared to bean soup, because when one cooks bean soup, some beans are cooked while others are not cooked. When eating, one comes sometimes across hard beans which are not cooked. It is the same with speech. When a person speaks a great deal, some deceptive words may permeate his speech. Or it may also happen that everything he says is true, from the first word until the last. We can only know with regard to ourselves when we are sincere and when truthful. It is Panya that knows Akusala as Akusala. We may begin to see that Akusala is ugly, that it is wrong. Panya, that is of a higher degree, can abandon Akusala so that it decreases. However, if one does not see the disadvantage and the danger of Akusala Dhammas, Akusala will only increase. The realization of the Four Noble Truths leads to the eradication of defilements. But in order to realize the Four Noble Truths, we should be truthful in action, speech, and mind. Akusala Dhammas arise because of their appropriate conditions. If sati arises, it can at such moments be aware of the characteristic of Akusala Dhamma, and in this way, Akusala can be given up. We should not delay being aware of the characteristic of the Dhamma that naturally appears, so that it can be known as it is. When Akusala appears and there is awareness of it, we can immediately let go of it. We have a great deal of defilements, and without the support of the perfections, it is impossible to penetrate the Four Noble Truths, to become a stream winner, Sotapanna, who will not be reborn more than 7 times before the attainment of arahatship. Even Sariputta, who had Panya of the degree of a chief disciple, developed the perfections during one incalculable period and 100,000 aeons, so that he could become a Sotapanna. He could, because he had accumulated the perfections for such a long time, become an arahat 15 days after he had attained the stage of Sotapanna. The perfection of truthfulness is truthfulness or sincerity in developing kusala, with the aim to eradicate defilements. If there is no truthfulness with regard to the development of kusala, defilements cannot be eradicated. Truthfulness in the development of kusala with the aim to eradicate defilements begins with truthfulness with regard to the triple gem. We should be truthful and honest with ourselves while we consider in what way we show our reverence, respect and confidence towards the Triple Gem. Do we sincerely have respect and confidence in the Buddha, the Exalted One, when we see a Buddha statue? We can test our truthfulness with regard to the Triple Gem if we are aware of our thoughts when we see a Buddha statue. Do we take refuge in the Triple Gem with truthfulness? We may think of the excellent qualities of the Buddha with respect, reverence and esteem. Or, when we see a Buddha statue, do we ask for favors such as protection, possessions, praise or a position of honor? We should know ourselves as we really are. We should be truthful, and we should not ask for gains and favors. We should be intent to apply the Dhamma while we show respect to our teacher, the Exalted One. We can be truthful in the application of the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. In this way, we truly take our refuge in the Triple Gem. After the Buddha, the Exalted One, finally passed away, the Dhamma is the teacher in his stead. Truthfulness to the Dhamma means studying it with sincerity, with the aim to have correct understanding of it. We should not study the Dhamma with the aim to gain something, to acquire honor or praise, but only to have correct understanding of it. We should develop right understanding of the realities which appear, so that defilements can be eradicated and ignorance abandoned. The temple is a dwelling place, a place where we can hear the Dhamma and study it. It does not belong to the monks, but it belongs to the Triple Gem. Because of confidence in the excellent qualities of the Triple Gem, temples are built as dwelling places, places where the Dhamma can be studied. Therefore, we should consider whether we are truthful in our paying honor and respect to the Triple Gem. We read in the Illustrator of Ultimate Meaning, the Paramatta Jyotika, commentary to the Minor Collection, Kudakapata of the Kudaka Nikaya, in the commentary to the Good Omen Discourse, the Mangala Sutta, about the First Council. We read that the Venerable Mahakasapa, the Venerable Upali, the Venerable Ananda and the other Arahats, 500 bhikkhus in all, met for the first rehearsal of the Dhamma Vinaya near the door of the Satapanni cave on the slopes of the Vebaha rock in Rajagaha. We read that when certain deities saw the Venerable Ananda sitting in the seat for announcing the true Dhamma, surrounded by the group of those who had attained mastery in it, they had the following thought, quote, "This Venerable One, the Videhan Seer, is the Blessed One's natural heir, as a shoot of the Sakyan clan, and he was 5 times signalized in the foremost in this discourse, and possesses the 4 wonderful and marvelous ideas that make him dear and precious to the 4 kinds of assembly. So surely after inheriting the kingdom of the Blessed One's true Dhamma, he has become an enlightened one. Knowing with his mind the thoughts in those deities' minds, he did not connive at such misattribution to him of non-existent special qualities. Consequently, in order to show his own discipleship, he said, 'Evam me sutam, ekam samayam bhagava, savatiyam viharati jetavane anatapindika kasa arame,' which means, 'Thus I have heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Savati in Jeta's wood, Anathapindika's park.'" Unquote. These words were spoken by the Venerable Ananda more than 2,500 years ago. If we today just hear the words, "Thus I have heard," we are impressed by the thoughts of the Venerable Ananda, who on the occasion of the first rehearsal made it clear that he was only a disciple. That is why he said, "Thus I have heard." He did not speak his own words because he was not the Exalted One. He was only a disciple and had heard these words from the Exalted One. When Buddhists hear the words, "Thus I have heard," even after more than 2,500 years have passed, enthusiasm and joy can arise because they have an opportunity to hear these words again. Thus, they can consider the Buddha's teachings when he was dwelling in the Jeta Grove or at other places. We read further on, quote, "Meanwhile, the 500 arahats and many thousand deities applauded the Venerable Ananda, saying, 'Good, sadhu, good,' while there was a great earth tremor with rain of various kind of flowers falling from the sky, and many other manifested marvels, and in many deities a sense of urgency arose, with the thought, 'What we heard in the Blessed One's presence is now reproduced in his absence too.'" Unquote. The Buddha had finally passed away, and the arahats who were present at the first council for the rehearsal of the teachings had heard these words before. However, even though the words they heard were spoken in the past, and they would not hear them any more in the presence of the Blessed One, there was yet an opportunity to hear the Dhamma again. This fact can be recollected with reverence to the Triple Gem by all listeners today. Although these events occurred a long time ago, each time we hear the Dhamma, we can see its benefit, and we can understand that the accumulation of kusala in the past is the condition for the kusala vipaka, which is hearing the Dhamma again in this life. Ananda consoled people who were disappointed at not seeing the Blessed One, assuring them that this was not a teaching of a dead teacher, but that the very Dhamma Vinaya was their teacher. By the words evam me sutam, "Thus I have heard," the Venerable Ananda wanted to console the Buddhists in times to come who may feel dismay that they cannot see the Buddha in person. However, we should remember that what we hear is not the teaching of a dead teacher, but that the Dhamma Vinaya is now our teacher. We shall know whether the Buddha is our real teacher if we listen, consider, and follow the right practice. When the Venerable Ananda spoke the word evam, meaning thus, he demonstrated the excellence of the teaching, because there should be a person who teaches and also a person who listens. There cannot be a listener without a teacher. Just by the word evam, thus, he demonstrated the excellence of the teaching. When he said, "Me sutam," "I have heard," he demonstrated the excellence of the discipleship. This disciple was the Venerable Ananda, not someone else. The Venerable Ananda, the disciple who was 5 times signalized as the foremost in discourse, said, "Evam me sutam," "Thus I have heard." When he said, "Ekam samayam," on one occasion, he demonstrated the excellence of the time when he heard the teaching of the Dhamma. We should remember that now is the excellence of the time to hear the Dhamma. It is not easy to find the opportunity to hear the Dhamma. when people have important tasks to fulfill, they cannot listen to the Dhamma, but they hear other things. With the words ekam samayam, on one occasion, the Venerable Ananda demonstrated the excellence of the occasion to hear the teaching of the Dhamma. Further on we read, quote, when he said the word Bhagava, the Blessed One, he demonstrated the excellence of the teacher, who was not an ordinary person. Bhagava, the Arahata Sammasambuddha, was the person who taught the Dhamma. With the words, at Savati in the Jeta Grove at Anathapindika's park, the Venerable Elder demonstrated the support of the lay followers of the Buddha in mentioning Savati, and he demonstrated the support of the monks in mentioning the Jeta Grove. Unquote. We read in the Paramatta Dipani, the commentary to the Iti Vuttaka, as it was said, Kudaka Nikaya, the commentary to the Ones, chapter 1, paragraph 1, Loba Sutta, an elaboration of the words Arahat and Bhagava. We read about four Adhitana Dhammas, Dhammas which are firm foundations connected with the Ten Perfections. We read that the Adhitana Dhammas are truthfulness, Sakka, relinquishment, Chaga, calm or peace, Upasama, and Panya. Sakka is truthfulness with regard to the development of Panya with the aim to realize the Four Noble Truths. We read in the commentary to the Loba Sutta, quote, the word Araham means that there should be truthfulness, Sakka, with regard to the development of Kusala. As regards the word Bhagava, the commentator refers to the fulfillment of the Adhitana Dhammas of Sakka, truthfulness, and Taga, relinquishment. Unquote. Thus, if truthfulness and relinquishment are not firmly established, the Four Noble Truths cannot be realized. We read, quote, by the word Bhagava, the commentator refers to the fulfillment of the Adhitana Dhammas of Sakka, truthfulness, and Taga, relinquishment, by explaining the Blessed One's truthfulness of his vow, Patinya, his truthfulness of speech, and the truthfulness of his Panya, and by explaining the relinquishment of sense objects which are considered important in the world, such as gain, honor, and praise, and the complete relinquishment of the kamma formations, abhisankaras, which means that there are no more defilements remaining. Unquote. Relinquishment, taga, does not only refer to the giving up of possessions, but it also means the giving up of clinging to sense objects, such as visible object and tangible object. Apart from this, it also refers to the giving up of what is considered important in the world, gain, honor, and praise. Moreover, it refers to the relinquishment of all defilements. True relinquishment is the relinquishment of everything, even of all defilements. One needs from the beginning also Sakka, truthfulness, as a firm foundation, so that defilements can be eradicated. We listen to the Dhamma, we understand it, and we know that we still have a great deal of defilements. Therefore, we need further to develop and to accumulate all the perfections in order to realize the Noble Truth and to attain true relinquishment. We read further on, quote, "By the word arahata, the commentator refers to the fulfillment of the adhitana dhammas, that is dhammas that are foundations, of upasama, calm or peace, and panya, by showing the attainment of the calming of all sankhara dhammas, conditioned realities, and by showing the attainment of the awakening wisdom," unquote. And we read about the importance of truthfulness as follows, quote, "Therefore, the adhitana dhamma of Sakka is the perfection developed by the Buddha when he was still a bodhisattva and made the aspiration, abhinihara, for the fulfillment of the highest good which is supramundane," unquote. An aspiration, abhinihara, is a weighty cause of receiving a weighty result, and this is the attainment of Buddhahood. He reads, quote, "For this reason he accumulated each perfection in accordance with his vow, and this was inspired by his great compassion. He fulfilled the adhitana dhamma of relinquishment as a perfection because he relinquished what was an enemy," unquote. Studying the dhamma and applying it, and knowing the importance of the truth, is the way leading to the realization of the noble truths. In Verses of Uplift, Udana, Chapter 1, Number 9, Metit Hare, Jatila, it has been explained that if one does not accumulate Sati Sampajanya, one will become deluded. And we read, quote, "Thus I have heard. On a certain occasion, the Exalted One was staying near Gaya on Gaya Head. Now, on that occasion, a great number of ascetics, on the cold winter nights between the 8th in time of snowfall, were plunging up and down in the water and sprinkling and burning sacrifice, thinking, 'This way comes purity.' Now the Exalted One saw that great number of ascetics so doing, and at that time, seeing the meaning of it, gave utterance to this verse of Uplift." Subquote. "Not by water is one pure, though many folk bath there. In whom is truth and Dhamma, he is pure and he is a Brahman." Subunquote. We read in the Paramatta Dipani, the commentary to the verses of Uplift, Udanya, Kudaka Nikaya, the following explanation of this sutta. Quote, "Or else there is no one who is clean, no being said to be purified from the stain of evil through the aforementioned water. Why? Or abundant folk would bath there. For were there that which is known as purity from evil through submersion in the water, and so on as forementioned, abundant folk would bath here in the water, just as there would be purity from evil from them all, for the one performing evil acts such as matricide and so on, as well as for any other creature upwards from and including fish and tortoises even, such as cows and buffaloes, and so forth. But this is not the case. Why? On account of bathing not being an opponent of the root causes of evil. For surely something can only be said to be an opponent of that which it destroys, as is light that of darkness, and the knowledge that of ignorance, bathing being no such opponent of evil. Therefore, the conclusion has to be reached that there is no being clean through water. He then says, in whom there be truth, and so on, to indicate the means by which there is rather being clean. Herein, in whom, yamhi, in the person in whom, there be truth, sakam, there be both telling the truth and truth as abstinence from lying speech, or alternatively, there be that which is true, sakam. There be both that which is true in the form of knowledge and that which is true in the highest sense. Dhamma, dhammo, dhamma in the form of the Aryan path and dhamma in the form of their fruitions. In the person in whom all of this is discovered, that is one who is clean, and that is the one who is the Brahmin, so suci so cha brahmano, that Arya Pugala, especially the one in whom the asavas have been destroyed, is the one who, by way of a purity that is perpetual, clean, and the Brahmin. But why, in this connection, is truth included separately from Dhamma? On account of the fact of truth being of great service. For instance, the virtues of truth are made manifest in countless suttas passages. Unquote. This commentary then refers to different sutta passages, such as, quote, truth is indeed the deathless word, unquote. Quote, truth is for sure the sweetest of flavors, unquote. Quote, in truth and in the goal and in the Dhamma are the good established, unquote. And, quote, whilst Brahmin recluses stationed in the truth, unquote, and so on. Whilst that which is the converse of the truth is made manifest by way of for the person who has transgressed, who is of lying speech, who gets not even one thing right, and, quote, the one who speaks of what did not take place goes to hell, unquote, and so forth, unquote. The perfection of truthfulness should be developed together with Panya so that the noble truth can be realized. We need courage so that we are diligent and turn away immediately from akusala. If we are too slow in turning away from akusala, it will later on become more difficult or even too late to do so, as must have happened life after life. We read in the commentary to the Iti Futaka, as it was said, the ones, chapter 1, paragraph 1, Lobha Sutta, which was quoted above, quote, loyalty to the Buddha is loyalty with firm confidence. For a person with such confidence, be he monk, deity, Mara or Brahma, it is impossible to steal. Someone who is steadfast in his loyalty would not give up his confidence in the Buddha or his teachings, even when in danger of life. Therefore, the Buddha said that a person with wisdom and gratefulness is a noble friend who is steadfast in loyalty. Unquote. Loyalty to people other than the Buddha may be of different degrees, and it may be limited. It may last long, or it may last for just one moment. However, the loyalty of Buddhists towards the Buddha is forever, until the end of life. From the time of childhood until one has become an adult, one can, from morning until night, hear the chanting of texts recollecting the excellent qualities of the Triple Gem. This makes us realize the excellence of the Buddha's truthfulness in the development of the perfections, so that he could penetrate the noble truths and become a support beyond measure to living beings, to devas and mankind. We read in the commentary to the Ittivutaka, quote, "The Buddha is called Bhagava because people are steadfast in their loyalty towards him, and because the Buddha is always intent on the benefit of all living beings in the world, and hence considers in his great compassion to teach the Dhamma. He teaches the Dhamma so that all beings could acquire steadfastness in Sila, in Samadhi, the calm that is freedom from defilements, and in Panya. The Buddhist followers, both monks and lay followers, should be sincere in their loyalty to the Buddha, and they can express this by offering all kinds of gifts, such as flowers, incense, unguents, and other things by which they can honor him." Unquote. We see that the person who is truthful and sincere, and who is intent on the welfare of other beings in the world, has eradicated all defilements. People can see his great compassion and his wisdom, and hence their loyalty to the Buddha, the Exalted One, surpasses their loyalty to anybody else. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct, Miscellaneous Sayings, quote, "Only the man of wisdom is skillful in providing for the welfare of all beings, not deceiving, undertaking to give support to others, and not uttering speech that deviates from the truth. This is called practice with truthfulness." Unquote. And this is the practice of the Sammasambuddha, the Exalted One. This is skillfulness in providing for the welfare of all beings, by teaching them the way to eradicate the attachment. He shows the danger of akusala and explains the way to further develop kusala. He does not deceive, he tries to give support to others, and does not utter speech that deviates from the truth. And this is called practice with truthfulness. If someone is not truthful in the practice that leads to the realization of the noble truth, he will be attached to possessions, honor and fame. He will encourage others to follow a practice that does not lead to the eradication of defilements. Some people say that one should just practice and not study, that it is not necessary to have understanding of the Dhamma, whereas others say that one should first study and have understanding before one practices. Whom should we believe? We should consider ourselves what the right course is that brings the appropriate effect. If we trust another person, we should know for what reason. Is it because he is famous, or because he explains the right course that brings the appropriate effect and is able to help people to have right understanding of the Dhamma? Truthfulness is the Dhamma that enhances the arising and development of all kusala, because truthfulness is sincerity with regard to eradication of defilements. When kusala does not arise, and we realize that we are not sincere in the development of kusala, this can in fact be a condition for its arising. When akusala arises, we should be truthful so that sati sampajanya can be aware of the characteristic of akusala. In this way, there are conditions for the abandoning of akusala and the development of kusala. The Bodhisattva developed in his daily life all kinds of kusala to a high degree, including very subtle and refined kusala. People who have not yet realized the Four Noble Truths should follow in the Bodhisattva's steps, and this means that one should develop all degrees of panya with the aim to eradicate defilements. We should reflect on the daily life of the Bodhisattva before he attained Buddhahood. He was truthful in developing kusala with the aim to abandon and eradicate defilements. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct in the Miscellaneous Sayings about the way of practice of the Bodhisattva during the time he was developing the perfections. If someone wants to realize the Noble Truths, be he monk or layman, he should consider what practice he should follow so that he will realize the Noble Truths, and he should be truthful and sincere in his practice. We read, quote, "He should work energetically for the welfare of beings, be capable of enduring everything, whether desirable or undesirable, and he should speak without deception," unquote. This is only a short phrase, but here we can grasp the essence of it by considering it deeply and by applying it. And in order to be able to apply these words, we should be patient with regard to what is desirable or undesirable. We read, quote, "He should speak without deception. He should suffuse all beings with universal loving kindness and compassion. Whatever causes suffering for beings, all that he should be ready to take upon himself, and he should rejoice in the merits of all beings," unquote. We should consider what was said about applying energy for the welfare of beings. We should not have selfish motives, not act for our own sake when we are giving support to others. We need energy, otherwise we could not help others in an unselfish way. We should support others as far as we are able, to such as sharing in the performance of their task, alleviating their burden. At such moments we can realize immediately that we need energy when we want to help others. We can understand that in order to eradicate defilements, we should follow the example of the Bodhisattva's practice. We should apply energy for the welfare of beings in whatever way we can, depending on the situation of our daily life, even by way of speech, by giving guidance to others. It may be somewhat troublesome for us to help others, but our support can be a condition for others also to develop a great deal of kusala in their lives. We can give support to others if we apply energy for their benefit. As we read in the commentary, quote, "He should be capable of enduring everything, whether desirable or undesirable," unquote. When we are infatuated with something, we may realize that this is not ordinary attachment, but a stronger degree of lobha. We may be absorbed in the object of attachment, but when sati sampajanya arises, we can realize that we should endure everything, whether desirable or undesirable. If we gradually learn to be patient, we shall know what the characteristic of true patience is. We can accumulate patience in all situations, no matter whether we experience objects through the body sense or hear someone else's speech. We can learn to be patient and not complain about cold, heat, or other difficult situations in life. And then we shall understand what patience is. As we read in the commentary, quote, "He should speak without deception," unquote. A righteous person speaks in accordance with the truth, whereas an evil person utters deceptive speech. As we read in the commentary, quote, he should suffuse all beings with universal loving kindness and compassion, unquote. One's loving kindness should be universal, without partiality. Generally, people who have loving kindness for someone who is righteous, not for an evil person. This shows that loving kindness and compassion are not extended to all beings, that they are not yet universal. If someone has developed loving kindness, he can extend it to all beings, be they righteous or evil. And then Satisabhajanya is aware and understand what is proper and what is improper. When we are angry and displeased, when we look down upon someone who is evil or commits bad deeds, we have akusala citta. Our citta is equal to the citta of the evil person, because we have contempt for him. Even a short phrase of the Dhamma can help us to develop Satisabhajanya and to have a growing understanding of the realities arising within ourselves, so that we can further develop kusala. We read in the commentary, quote, he should rejoice in the merits of all beings, unquote. When we notice someone else's kusala and when we rejoice in it, we are truthful. We are sincere in our appreciation of his kusala. We may not be able to perform a good deed ourselves, but we can appreciate someone else's kusala. If we do not appreciate this, the citta is kusala. This is the end of part 1 of chapter 1 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections, part 1 of chapter 8, the perfection. I am reading to you the second part of chapter 8 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections. Chapter 8, the perfection of truthfulness, the second part. The perfection of truthfulness is very essential. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct in the Miscellaneous Sayings, quote, the perfection of truthfulness should be reviewed thus. Without truthfulness, virtue, etc., is impossible, and there can be no practice in accordance with one's vows. All evil states converge upon the transgression of truth. I repeat, all evil states converge upon the transgression of truth. One who is not devoted to truth is unreliable, and his word cannot be accepted in the future. On the other hand, one devoted to truth secures the foundation of all noble qualities. With truthfulness as the foundation, he is capable of purifying and fulfilling all the requisites of enlightenment. Not deceived about the true nature of phenomena, he performs the functions of all the requisites of enlightenment and completes the practice of the bodhisattva path. Unquote. As we read, without truthfulness, virtue, etc., is impossible. This means that without truthfulness, one does not speak the truth, acts with deception, and all one's deeds are crooked. Without truthfulness, one cannot observe sila, and there is no practice in accordance with one's vows. Vow, patinya, means being steadfast in truthfulness. If someone does not speak the truth, he cannot act in accordance with his vow. As we read in the commentary, quote, all evil states converge upon the transgression of truth. One who is not devoted to truth is unreliable, and his word cannot be accepted in the future. Unquote. Thus, we see the significance of the perfection of truthfulness. This is truthfulness and sincerity with regard to the right practice leading to the eradication of defilements. It includes the development of all kinds of kusala, so that the noble truth, the four noble truths, can be realized. We need the perfection of sakka, truthfulness, with regard to the right practice. Our sole purpose should be the penetration of the true nature of realities. We may not know thoroughly and in all details what the right practice is. We should reflect on the Bodhisattva's practice before he attained Buddhahood, and then we shall know that he gave an example of the right practice of kusala, kusala that was very subtle and refined. And we can follow his example in our daily life. The perfection of panya should be developed together with the other perfections. We cannot forgo any of the perfections, because each perfection is a necessary support for the others. Truthfulness, sakka, for example, is necessary for the performing of generosity, dana. Without truthfulness, generosity cannot reach fulfillment. Without truthfulness, the observance of sila cannot reach accomplishment. Thus, truthfulness is essential for the fulfillment of the other perfections. We read about the meaning of truthfulness in the Paramatta Jyotika, the commentary to the Sutta Nipata, the group of discourses, 1, the snake, chapter 10, Alavaka. Quote, the term sakka has several meanings. It can mean truthfulness in speech, vacca sakka, or it can mean truthfulness in abstaining, virati sakka. It is steadfastness in the truth, in the abstention from akusala kama. It can mean truthfulness of view, ditti sakka, truthfulness as to right view. But sakka can also refer to brahmana sakka, Brahmin truth, paramata sakka, ultimate truth, and arya sakka, noble truth. The term, quote, sakshena, unquote, by truthfulness, means someone acquires a good reputation because he speaks the truth, because of sincerity. The Buddhas, Pacheka Buddhas, and the Aryan disciples have a high reputation because of ultimate truth, paramata sakka, unquote. Only panya can understand the true nature of each Dhamma. However, the development of panya is conditioned by listening to the Dhamma and by considering it in all details. One should develop panya gradually, stage by stage. We still have defilements, but we listen to the Dhamma, and we have taken refuge in the Dhamma during this life. This shows that we are trying to follow the way to develop panya, so that the characteristics of realities that are appearing now can be penetrated. We should follow in the footsteps of the Bodhisattvas and accumulate the perfections. People sometimes say that they want to practice the Dhamma. But the practice of the Dhamma is the abandoning of akusala, of lobha, of dosa, and of moha. Lobha should be abandoned when it arises. That is the practice of the Dhamma. If someone wants to apply the Dhamma, he should not delay this. When anger arises, one should abandon it so that there is non-hate. That is the practice of Dhamma. When jealousy, stinginess, or other kinds of akusala arise, one should abandon them. That is the practice of the Dhamma. However, defilements cannot be eradicated according to our wishes or expectations. Even the Bodhisatta, who had accumulated the perfections during innumerable lives, was still susceptible to the power of akusala, because he had not yet eradicated all defilements. We should reflect on the Bodhisatta who accumulated the perfections in order to realize the noble truth. He wanted to understand the truth of the four Paramatta Dhammas of Citta, Cetasika, Rupa and Nibbana. We should develop Panya in order to realize the truth of Dhamma. We should see the benefit of Sakka, of the truth. The Paramatta Dhammas, which are the true Dhammas, have unalterable characteristics. We should find out what the true characteristic is of Citta, Cetasika, and Rupa, which are not self, not a being or person. We should find out what the true nature of Nibbana is, the Dhamma that is different from Citta, Cetasika and Rupa. If someone seeks the truth, he wants to penetrate it. And hence he can see the benefit of the truth. He should develop all degrees of truthfulness, beginning with the truthfulness in speech. We read in the commentary to the Harita Jataka, number 431, that King Brahmadatta was at that time reigning in Varanasi. King Brahmadatta in the past was the Venerable Ananda of the present time. The text states, quote, "At that time, the Bodhisatta was born in a Brahmin family who possessed wealth worth 80 crores, and because of his golden complexion, his parents called him Young Goldskin, Harita Kumara. When he was grown up and he had been educated at Takasila, he thought, 'The treasure that my parents assembled is still there. But my parents, who were seeking that treasure, have died. They do not exist anymore.' When he was considering this, he understood that he himself would also have to die, and hence he gave away his wealth and became a recluse in the Himalaya, where he cultivated jhana until he could realize the five supernatural powers and the eight attainments. When he wished to obtain salty or sour food, he left the forest, went to the city of Varanasi, and reached the royal park. When the king saw him, he had confidence in him, and offered to have a dwelling place built for him in the royal park, and he assigned an attendant to wait on him. The recluse obtained food from the palace, and he lived there for 12 years. Later on, the king went away to pacify a conflict at the frontier and committed the care of the recluse to the queen, who from then on ministered to him with her own hands. One day she had prepared his food, and as he delayed his coming, she bathed in scented water, put on a soft tunic of fine cloth, and opened the lattice. She lay down, and opening the lattice, She lay down on the couch and let the wind play upon her body. And when the recluse came flying through the air to the window, the queen heard the rustling sound of his bark garments. When she stood up quickly, her robe of fine cloth fell off. As soon as the recluse saw this, his defilements, which had been dormant for thousands of aeons, rose up like a poisonous snake lying in a box, and hence his whole skill in jhana disappeared. The recluse, who was unable to apply mindfulness, went inside, seized the queen by her hand, and then they gave themselves over to misconduct. His misconduct was rumored throughout the whole city, and the king's ministers reported this in a letter to the king. The king could not believe what was told him, and he thought, "They say this because they are eager to damage him." When he had pacified the border country, he returned to Varanasi and asked the queen, "Is the rumor true that the recluse Harita and you misconducted yourselves?" The queen answered that it was true. The king did not believe this, although the queen said that it was true. The king went to the park, saluted the recluse, and sitting respectfully on one side, he spoke the first stanza in the form of a question. "Great Brahmin, I heard it said, the recluse Harita leads a sinful life. I take it that this is not the truth." Who forsakes the truth cannot attain Buddhahood, even if he sits in the sacred enclosure of the Bodhi tree. Hence I should only speak the truth. In certain occasions a bodhisattva may destroy life, that life take what is not given to him, commit adultery, drink strong liquor, but he may not tell a lie, speech that violates the truth. Therefore, speaking only the truth, he uttered the second stanza. "The rumors, great king, you have heard are true. Infatuated by the objects of delusion, I have done wrong." Hearing this, the king spoke the third stanza. "Keen Panya is intent on what is beneficial. It can abandon lust that has arisen within you. For what benefit do you have, Panya, if you cannot dispel sinful thoughts?" The end of the song of the stanza. Sick people generally depend on medicine. Even so, keen panya is like a medicine. It is intent on what is beneficial, and it can cure us from lust that has arisen. We further read, quote, "Then the recluse Harita pointed out the power of defilements to the king and spoke the fourth stanza," sub unquote. "Four defilements in the world, great king, are coarse and have great strengths. They are lust, hate, ignorance, and intoxication. When they overmaster beings, panya cannot develop. It is as if they fall into a great river," sub unquote. The king, on hearing this, spoke the fifth stanza. Subquo. "You deserve praise, Harita. You are a saint, perfect in sila, of pure conduct. You are wise with true panya." Sub unquote. But then Harita spoke the sixth stanza. Subquo. "Evil thoughts, great king, cause clinging to an image, taking it for beautiful, and they are accompanied by excitement. They are bound to harm even a person with España who is inclined to the excellent of recluseship. Sub-unquote. These words can remind us of the danger of defilements. Someone may believe that he is out of danger because he has developed a certain degree of panya, but he should not be neglectful. Akusala can even harm a person with panya who has a keen interest in the Dhamma and enjoys its benefit. We read, quote, "The king, when he encouraged the recluse Harita to make an effort to abandon his defilements, spoke the seventh stanza. Subquo, lust arises in your body and destroys your beauty. Abandon lustful excitement and you will prosper. You will be praised by many for your wisdom." Sub-unquo. When the Bodhisattva heard this, he could regain his awareness and consider the danger in sense pleasures. Thereupon he spoke the eighth stanza. Sub-quo. Sense pleasures are blinding. They cause much suffering. They injure gravely. I shall look for the root of sensuousness. I shall cut down lust with its bonds. Sub unquo. Unquo. The root of sensual desire is unwise attention. Ayoniso manasikara. We read, quote, "The recluse developed samatha and could again attain jhana. He saw the danger of dwelling in an unsuitable place that was the royal park. Therefore, he returned to the forest to be free from all taint of womankind. When he had come to the end of his life, he entered the Brahma plane." Unquote. The Buddha told this story in the Jeta Grove because of a discontented monk. When this monk saw a beautifully attired woman, defilements arose in him and he wanted to leave the monkhood. When he was brought against his will to the Buddha by his teacher and preceptor, and when the Buddha asked him whether it was true that he was a backslider, this monk said that it was true. Thereupon the Buddha said, unquote, "Monk, defilements do not lead to happiness. They destroy good qualities. They cause rebirth in hell. Why could your defilements not cause your destruction? Why could a strong wind that strikes Mount Sineru not carry off a withered leaf? I myself, during the life I was the recluse Harita, had acquired the five supernatural powers and the eight attainments, and I strived after awakening wisdom. However, in spite of this, I was, because of this kind of defilement, unable to have awareness, and I fell away from jhana." Unquote. The Buddha taught this story so that we could see the disadvantage of akusala and the power of accumulated defilements. We should reflect on what we read. Quote, "Why should a strong wind that strikes Mount Sineru not carry off a withered leaf?" Unquote. We all have defilements that are not yet eradicated, and we are therefore not as steady as Mount Sineru. We are only like withered leaves, which are light and can be blown away by the wind of lobha, dosa and moha. We read, quo, when the Buddha had told the Harita Jataka, he explained the truth, and after he had finished, that monk attained the fruition of arahatship, unquote. Truthfulness is sincerity in the development of kusala to the degree of a perfection. If there is no truthfulness, no sincerity in one's actions, they cannot reach accomplishment. Sakka, truthfulness, is necessary for all kinds of kusala, be it dana, sila, or mental development. One should not neglect the development of any degree of kusala. If one develops the perfections in order to abandon the defilements, one should notice also subtle defilements, such as deceptive speech, even with regard to small matters. If deceptive speech becomes someone's habit, it will be easy to speak a lie, and we will believe that it is not wrong to do so. If someone abstains from deceptive speech, if he is truthful and acts in accordance with his promises, truthfulness will become natural to him. Then he is able to see the danger of akusala at the moment he tells a lie. Even deceptive speech concerning unimportant matters is akusala. But if someone accumulates deceptive speech all the time, he does not see its danger. Thus, we see that it is not easy to discern the characteristic of akusala. We can have understanding of realities stemming from listening to the Dhamma, but this does not mean that we know their characteristics when they are appearing. We should further develop understanding in conformity with what we learned by listening, and we should be aware of realities. We may be deceptive in speech, be it even a little, or we may not act in accordance with our promise. But when sati sampajanya arises, it can realize that this is akusala. Many akusala cittas arise in a day, but we do not know this because of our forgetfulness. There is no awareness of the characteristics of realities, no understanding of them as they are. Understanding has to be very detailed and refined so that the characteristics of realities can be known as they are. The development of satipatthana will lead to a more precise discrimination between different realities, and thus Panya is able to know the characteristic of akusala. When akusala arises, Panya can know what kind of akusala arises, and it can know its characteristic as different from kusala. In this way, kusala dhamma can gradually be further developed. Truthfulness is a perfection that accompanies the perfection of Panya. Without Panya, there cannot be truthfulness, because defilements are still strong. We should make every effort to know what Sakka truthfulness is, that is, sincerity in the development of kusala, no deviation from kusala. If we happen to deviate from kusala, we should know that it has not yet reached accomplishments. When sati sampajanya arises, it can realize when and where we go wrong, and this is a condition for restraint in the future. Truthfulness that is superior, Arya Sakka, is the truth penetrated by the Aryan. The penetration of the noble truth is the condition for becoming an Aryan, an enlightened person. At this moment, we try to listen and to understand the true Dhamma. Nothing else can be as beneficial in our life as the understanding of the truth of realities. We should make an effort to understand the realities that are appearing and to develop also all other kinds of kusala. The characteristics of realities can be penetrated in conformity with the understanding acquired through listening to the Dhamma and the study of it. At this moment, realities are arising and falling away. They are not a being, not a person, they are not self. However, we are not yet able to see the arising and falling away of realities because of our many defilements and because of ignorance that hides the truth. We need the perfection of truthfulness so that we are sincere in the development of all degrees of kusala through body, speech and mind, be it dana, sila or bhavana. Otherwise, we shall be overwhelmed by the power of akusala. Seeing the benefit of truthfulness is a condition for accumulating it. We may contemplate truthfulness within ourselves, but we should also reflect on the truthfulness of the Buddha when he was still the Bodhisatta and developed the perfection of truthfulness. We read in the Basket of Conduct 3.11, Conduct of Kandadipayana, quote, "And again, when I was Kandadipayana, a seer, I fared dissatisfied for more than 50 years. No one knew of this dissatisfied mind of mine, for I told no one. The dissatisfaction went on in my mind. A fellow Brahma farer, Mandavya, a friend of mine, a great seer, in connection with a former deed, acquired impalement on a stake. I, after attending to him, restored him to health. Having asked permission, I went back to what was my own hermitage. A Brahman friend of mine, bringing his wife and little son, the three people coming together, approached as guests. While I was exchanging greetings with them, seated in my own hermitage, the youth threw a ball along and angered a poisonous snake. Then that little boy, looking for the way by which the ball had gone, touched the head of the poisonous snake with his hand. At his touch, the snake, angered, relying on its strong venom, angry with utmost anger, instantly bit the youth. As he was bitten by the poisonous snake, the youth fell to the ground. Whereby afflicted was I. That sorrow of the parents worked on mine. Comforting them that were afflicted, shaken by grief, first of all I made the highest, supremely glorious asseveration of truth. For just 7 days I, with a mind of faith, desiring merit, fared the Brahma faring. Until that time, my faring for more than 50 years I fared unwillingly. But by this truth may there be well-being. The poison destroyed. May Yanadatta live." Sub-unquote. With this asseveration of truth made by me, the Brahman youth who had trembled with the strength of poison, rousing himself, stood up and was well. There was no one equal to me in truth. This was my perfection of truth. We read, unquote. We read in the commentary to this passage, quote, "The Bodhisatta, who was in that life named Dipayana, went to see his friend Mandavia. He, Mandavia, was impaled on a stake, and because Dipayana excelled in sila, he did not neglect this recluse. He stood there leaning on a spear throughout the three watches of the night. He acquired the name Kanda Dipayana, Kanda meaning black, because his body became black by the drops of blood that streamed from the recluse Mandavia's body and that had dried up. Question: what is the cause that the great man who during many thousands of existences had the inclination to renunciation and who found happiness in the Brahma fairing, what is the cause in his life dissatisfied with it? Answer: this was because of the instability that is characteristic of non-enlightened people. Question: why did he not enter again the married state? Answer: at first he saw the disadvantage in sense pleasures, and because of his inclination to renunciation he became a monk. However, because of the lack of wise consideration, he became dissatisfied with the Brahma fairing. Although he could not abandon that dissatisfaction, he disliked to be blamed by people who might say, Kanda Dipayana raves on and on, he is unreliable. He left his wealth and went forth from the household life. He left his possessions, and then he wants to return again to these. Because he feared that his sense of shame and fear of blame would be destroyed, the great man, full of suffering and unhappy feeling, even cried and shed tears that streamed over his face. In this way he continued the Brahma fairing and did not leave it. Unquote. As we read in the Basket of Conduct, the Bodhisattva highly valued truthfulness. He spoke the truth, saying that he was only for 7 days a recluse, wholeheartedly, with full confidence in Kusala. He expressed his confidence in Kusala and in truthfulness by a solemn utterance, an assertion of truth. This was the condition for the Brahman used to recover. An assertion of truth is a forceful affirmation of faith in the truth, which can create a direct effect on someone else's condition. Some people may have doubts about the assertion of truth referred to in the above quoted passage, or they may have heard that an assertion of truth can bring its results according to one's wishes. However, when a person has to experience suffering and distress, he cannot, in order to overcome his suffering, utter an assertion of truth without knowing what truthfulness is and without understanding its high value. It is essential that one, before making an assertion of truth, sees the superiority and the benefit of truthfulness. Moreover, it is necessary to develop the perfection of truthfulness. If someone accumulates the perfection of truthfulness together with the other perfections so that they gain strength, and if he sees the benefit of truthfulness, he may express an assertion of truth. However, not everyone can do so. It also depends on the power of his kusala and the degree of his understanding of truthfulness. Everybody should know for himself what degree of kusala he wants to develop and to what extent. If someone does not listen to the Dhamma, and if he does not accumulate all kinds of good qualities, he may not even be intent on the development of kusala. He may only be infatuated by pleasure and perform very good deeds. Whereas if someone has listened also in past lives to the Dhamma of former Buddhas, he has contemplated the Dhamma and acquired more understanding, he will be inclined to develop kusala. Some people may throughout life have no inclination to develop kusala as much as they are able to. They may not develop the accumulated conditions to even think of kusala, and therefore they cannot perform it. Someone may not be intent on helping others, or he has wrong understanding about kusala. He may wonder why he should tire himself or take the trouble to help others. This shows us the diverse nature of the cittas we accumulate day after day. Some people, even if they have listened to the Dhamma, may not be able to forgive others because they cannot apply the Dhamma. We have to accumulate kusala from now on so that it can be further developed. We can begin to be intent on forgiving others, not disapproving of them. All of us who traverse the cycle of birth and death have many defilements, and hence we should develop all the different ways of kusala so that defilements can be eradicated. If we merely think about developing kusala, kusala will not be strong enough to be a condition for sincerity and truthfulness, so that we practice in conformity with our resolutions. The accumulation of wholesome qualities are the condition for truthfulness in action and speech. We have to continue to accumulate kusala so that we shall not be neglectful in applying kusala, in practicing it. It is difficult to know the truth, also in worldly matters. For example, when we hear news through different media about an event that occurred near to us or far away, it is difficult to find out whether it is true. What we hear is sometimes not true, but we take it for the truth. Our confusion, our defilements, make it most difficult to know what is true. To know realities as they are is even more difficult than knowing the truth of worldly matters. We should clearly see the value of truthfulness, including sincerity with regard to ourselves. We should develop truthfulness in action, speech and thoughts, even in seemingly unimportant matters. This means truthfulness in speech also when it regards appointments or promises. One may believe that these matters are unimportant. We should know, however, what type of citta arises when we feel that with regards of unimportant matters we do not need to be truthful to act in accordance with our speech and thoughts. The citta of each person is most intricate. And if there is no panya accompanying sati, it is impossible to understand that even with a slight degree of akusala that arises is conditioned, that even a slight degree of akusala that arises is conditioned by our accumulations. Defilements have been accumulated not only during this life, but also in past lives. Our life today is conditioned by past lives, and the accumulation of defilements will continue from life to life. Someone who earnestly develops panya should not only be intent on knowing the truth, but he should also strive after the eradication of his defilements, so that he is truthful in action and speech. He should be steady and firm in the development of kusala, including also the perfections, the perfection of determination, adetana parami, of truthfulness.